If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
We have some really exciting news at Motherly and have been hard at work behind the scenes on a big project. We recently launched the Motherly Shop, curated must-haves for motherhood. And you can use code MOTHERLY10 to get 10% off any order. Our editors have worked really hard to bring together the best brands for every stage of motherhood, all in one easy-to-find place. From products that help you conceive, to beautiful rugs that are washable and kid-friendly, to Montessori toys that inspire your child's imagination. We also have pregnancy-safe clean beauty, maternity wear, matching family pajamas, and much more, including our brand new pregnancy book, The Motherly Guide to Becoming Mama. The Motherly Shop's offerings are the perfect gift for a baby shower or a mom friend or, well, you. It's the best products that make motherhood better and more beautiful. Go to shop.mother.ly to check it out and use code MOTHERLY10 for 10% off your order. Mama, you've got this. Did you catch the part of Meghan Markle's interview with Oprah, kind of towards the end, where she talked about how she realized The Little Mermaid was a story about how a woman, a young woman, had to lose her voice to find love? It's a really powerful reminder of the stories that were around us when we were growing up as girls. And it's a narrative around what it means to be a woman or what it means to be desirable that I do think influenced all of us among many, many other stories. And it told us we had to be quiet and small and demure to be loved, to be worthy, to find the prince. And of course, at the very end of The Little Mermaid and in Meghan Markle's story, she gets her voice back. But I think it's a reminder of the way that we tell these stories about women and the ways that it influences our own view of ourselves. And as the mother of a daughter, I'm so happy that we are living in a time where we are starting to put women's stories at the center of the culture, because women have always had incredibly rich stories. Women have always been powerful. And I think that's what we're trying to do here at Motherly, is to take motherhood seriously, to put women in all the aspects of who we are as individuals and in our relationships and our dreams and our ambitions and our struggles and our triumphs, to put that at the center of the story. And there are so many incredible projects and outlets and influencers and thought leaders who are doing that in all kinds of new ways. And I am bringing one of those women to our podcast today. Hey, Mama. Welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have honest conversations about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy, the co-founder of Motherly, and I am a mother of four kids myself. Today's interview is with trailblazer Nima Rashanya Patel, who is editor and founding member of The Lily. So for those of you who don't know, The Lily is a Washington Post publication that was created by women journalists for women. The Lily's mission is to empower people with news and information that promotes inclusivity by exposing diverse voices and perspectives. Nima told me about the historic newspaper that inspired The Lily, and she also explains what she means by the word feminism. And we also talked about how her approach to motherhood is inspired by the lineage of her mother and the women who came before her. Nima Rashanya Patel, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So I know you're actually a podcast listener as well, which is thrilling. So you probably know that I like to ask people this question. Super curious what you think makes your particular approach to motherhood unique.
Well, of course, as you noted, I did know you were going to ask me this question. And what I find like really interesting is that so many women say that there really is, you know, not anything particularly unique about themselves as mothers, which I think just like says a lot about the way we think about ourselves as moms and women and kind of this entry into what is certainly a unique life experience. What I have found to be kind of the biggest honor when I became a mom was that I was entering this lineage of moms in my family. So of course, my own mother and my grandmothers and my aunts and my cousins. And I became part of this, again, like lineage in my family that I really turn to often when I feel really lonely in motherhood, and really that there isn't anything unique about what I'm going through, and all that it really takes is turning to someone either in that lineage or another mom I know to really remind myself of that. But yeah, I kind of like to remind myself that I am part of this line of moms who have all done it before me. And in most cases, in much more difficult circumstances. You know, my mom was an immigrant. She moved here in 1981, and my sister was born later that year. So certainly I am in a much more privileged position than she was when she first became a mom.
So I love that answer, right? That what you find so much connection to is this universal so-called connection to all the women that came before you. When you talked about how that gives you strength, do you mean that in the literal sense of like calling up a woman in that lineage? Or do you mean it like remembering the women in your family and that you kind of connect spiritually in a sense to that?
Well, I would say, I mean, certainly anyone is available. if I decide to pick up the phone and call them, one of the things, you know, a piece of advice that has always really stuck with me that my cousin, who I really admire as mom and as a person, you know, just someone I've really looked up to my whole life. A piece of advice she gave me and my husband, both when we got married and when I was pregnant, was that if you ever feel alone, if you ever feel that you are facing something that, you know, you feel totally alone, you're the only person that is going through this, just remember, like, most likely you are not the only person who has ever gone through this. And so the only thing you really need to do is turn to someone and ask for help. And that has always really stuck with me, I think, particularly in motherhood and particularly in a pandemic, mothering in a pandemic or parenting in a pandemic. It really can feel like you're really alone those nights when you just feel like you are the only person who is going through this. And of course, there are so many other people who have gone through this, but it really can feel very difficult to remember sometimes. So I do try and turn to people, which is quite honestly kind of a difficult thing for me to do, just kind of as like a person. But also, you know, as you noted, kind of like spiritually, just remembering everything that every woman in my family has been through, which is quite a bit. You know, when I think about like the lives that my grandmothers lived, just so different than the life that I'm living, which is like full of choice and full of privilege, to be quite honest.
Can you tell me more about that? What specifically do you know about your grandmother's own stories that puts your problems in a larger context and connects to their challenges? And in what ways are those different?
To me, what really stands out when I think about that is just the level of choice that I've had in my life, right? So what I wanted to study, what I wanted to pursue as a career, that I continued to work after I got married and after I had, you know, I have one son. So after I gave birth, I continued to work and, you know, just that level of choice that I've always had.
Speaking of that, I'm curious if you always knew that you wanted to be a journalist. Was that a path that you always were taking ownership of, or how did that come up for you?
Yeah, I would say it probably first kind of entered my mind that I wanted to be a journalist when I was in high school, and I worked on the school paper, and I just felt like, wow, this is really cool. I get to ask people questions and they answer me and I get to meet all these different people. And it was probably one of the first times I felt really like I was good at something. And then I went to college and I joined the school. I went to Rutgers University and I joined the school paper my first semester. And again, I just felt like, wow, if I could do this, you know, I was doing that obviously in addition to a full class load. And I just thought, wow, if I could do this for my full-time job, this is great. And it just felt like something I would never get bored of. The idea of becoming a grown-up and kind of doing the same thing day in and day out. Of course, there are parts of my job that sometimes feel monotonous and feel, you know, feel like it is the same thing day in and out. But largely, I get to learn about new people and hear new stories every day. And that's kind of what has always attracted me to journalism.
I love that. I love that as a fellow journalist and a former Washington Post journalist, getting to be curious on behalf of the Washington Post and getting paid to do that, like, felt on the good days, like I could just pinch myself that this is my life. It's also a lot of pressure, as you are well aware, but it's such a calling for a lot of people. I know I felt like honored to get to do that kind of work.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since I've started my work on The Lily, which has now been close to 4 years, it just feels extremely special. And it really does feel like an honor to get to share the stories of so many women, you know, who oftentimes we're just overlooking in a lot of ways. And especially during the pandemic right now, I think really having the opportunity to focus on the unique ways in which the pandemic is disproportionately impacting women across race and across class, across socioeconomic level, across the world, really feels like a big responsibility that I take seriously.
So for our listeners who don't know, can you just explain to them a little bit about what The Lily is and the sort of source of inspiration and the history behind this concept?
Sure. So The Lily launched in 2017 as a publication of The Washington Post, and we are focused on elevating the stories of women and gender. You can find us on thelily.com. You can find us. We have a really robust Instagram presence. We love telling stories in unique ways on Instagram. We have a newsletter that comes out twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. You can find us on Twitter, on Facebook. And we really launched as a way for people to find this kind of coverage in one place. So as you know, as a journalist, like oftentimes these stories, they're hard to find. And sometimes it can feel like nobody's covering these stories. And we really wanted to create kind of like a stopping place on the internet where we could bring together the best storytelling about women and gender in one place. And just, I guess, a little bit of a story behind why we're called The Lily. In 1849, the first American newspaper written and edited by women was founded, and it was called The Lily. It was founded by a woman named Amelia Bloomer. And so we were kind of named in that honor.
Why, for you, is it so important to put women at the center of these stories in such a deliberate way?
I mean, why not? You know, certainly, obviously, there are stories to tell about everyone across the board, but that's what we see all the time. I think one of the greatest things, just something I just love doing once in a while, is going to our homepage and just scrolling and seeing every single story featuring a woman. It's just hard to find. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be, but it is. And that's why we wanted to start The Lily.
So can you give a few recent examples? You mentioned how COVID has reshaped The Lily's coverage and, of course, like women's lives. So can you give a few recent examples to our listeners of stories that you guys are telling that maybe in the past just wouldn't have been told?
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly right now, you know, and this is not just The Lily, of course, it's a big story across the country and across the world, just the way that women are being negatively impacted by the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Of course, a big part of that is the way that women are being forced to leave the workforce. There are many women who have no choice. They have to remain in the workforce, but that doesn't mean childcare stops. It doesn't mean the challenges of childcare stop. It doesn't mean that any of the caregiving is stopping at home. Everything is just amplified, and it's really tearing open the way that our society has failed to support women, you know, women and moms. We have just kind of made up for it in all these secret ways. When I think about the way I used to like rush to drop off and rush to leave the office, and it was all just this facade, really. And I, again, am like in a very privileged position. I could afford a daycare. I had an office job that was traditional hours. And it's really just laying bare all of the ways that we have failed moms and we are failing parents. And I do think there are some really interesting ways that The Lily has been covering the ways that the pandemic has been affecting women. So one series that we launched during coronavirus is called the Coronavirus Diaries. So we basically ask women to keep a 30-day diary for us. So we have had a woman who's living in a multi-generational family, a woman who's working on the front lines, really just keep a diary for 30 days. And so we can really hear from a firsthand perspective what it is like for them to be living through the pandemic. And I think that especially right now, we're so isolated and we're so, you know, apart from other people, and everybody is going through their own circumstance right now. It can be really difficult to really continue at this point, months in with no end in sight, to continue to really have empathy toward these situations that other people are in. And so I hope that that's one thing that the Coronavirus Diaries really helps accomplish. Of course, we're all focused on kind of the challenges that we're facing individually, and everybody is facing some sort of challenge, whether it's that you're living alone, whether it's that you're struggling with childcare, whether it's that you lost your job. But it really can be difficult to kind of understand what we're going through as a country when we're so, and as a world, when we're so isolated. So that's kind of, you know, something I hope that is helping people understand what others are going through.
As you mentioned, you're not just covering these issues, you're also living them as a working mom. So what is your setup, and like, how has that evolved for you and your family?
Like for every other working family, it's been really difficult. I am very lucky to have had the support of my parents from the very beginning. So my husband is a physician, so he has been going into work, not necessarily full time. There was a period where he was able to just work a few days a week and work from home a couple of days a week, which was really helpful. But there was a period when he was going in full time, and I went to my parents for a month, and they were able to help me with childcare. And I have done that a couple of times since then, just going back for a couple of weeks when I know that my, you know, my workload is going to be really heavy, or I have a lot of meetings, or kind of just need like a break. And other than that, my husband and I were kind of switching off days where I could work and he was kind of working from home and taking care of our son. But there were many, many days where I was just kind of working from home with my son. And then really just as soon as my husband would come home, I would keep working. And then it was just getting increasingly difficult. Our daycare had reopened in July, and it was September. We hadn't sent him back. And so we kind of just bit the bullet at the end of September with the guidance of our pediatrician. And so far it's been going really, you know, thankfully we haven't had any scares, feel really comfortable with the care that he's receiving. Mm. And he's just flourishing there, honestly, in a way that I think being home with me while I'm trying to work and sticking Daniel Tiger in front of him, you know, it just didn't feel great.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You know, you talked about how as a working mom before COVID, you were always rushing to get your son to daycare, rushing to work, rushing. And it reminds me of like a little quote about how we expect working parents to work like they don't have kids and take care of kids like they don't have work. I guess I'm wondering, how do you hope all of our professional lives transform in the aftermath of COVID after? What gives you hope about what is possible?
Yeah, I will say what I find so interesting kind of looking back at the way I felt when I returned to work, and even the way I kind of continue to feel and certainly felt the days when I was at home alone with my son trying to work, that it's just amazing. You know, I do get a ton of support from my boss and my director and my team. You know, I'm the only mom on my team, but, you know, we're a team full of women that writes and covers these kind of stories daily. I mean, everyone is so supportive. And I still feel that kind of pressure. And so what I really think about a lot is like, what must it be like for the thousands of women who do not receive that kind of support from their work environment, who do not have the kind of flexibility I was afforded. And despite all of that, I was still felt so much pressure, and I continue to, about really presenting this front that I have no trouble balancing it. You know, I can do it all. So part of it, I think, is hopefully all of us kind of understanding that we don't need to be doing that. We don't need to be presenting this front that we can do it all, because it's not our fault. None of this is our fault. It's the way that we have kind of broken down and not prioritize things correctly. You know, if you look at the way things have reopened and where our priorities have been lying, that is kind of what we have decided as a society.
Meaning specifically, I know in the DC area, I have a lot of friends in DC, of course, because I lived there for 10 years. Like, schools are pretty much shut down. I have a really good friend, dropped out of the workforce. She was a VP. She couldn't manage it. She had a high risk person in her household. So are you suggesting that, you know, it's the bars and restaurants that are open, but the schools that are closed is part of the inverted priorities?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's not up to me. Yeah, I'm not a government official. And again, like, I am fortunate that daycares are open. I think the challenges that school-age parents are facing are much, much tougher than what I'm facing. When I was home with my son, I could like give him a bag of cotton balls and tell myself that was like sensory play or whatever, right? But like, to have a school-aged kid means that they're actively falling behind reading and writing and math mm-hmm. and all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's an enormous amount of pressure. It's a totally different ballgame for school-aged parents. But yeah, I mean, it is difficult to see. One thing I really thought about around Halloween was like, when you saw the way that neighborhoods and houses and all these people wanted to show up for kids for Halloween, right? It was really beautiful. And it made me very emotional to see the way that people wanted kids to feel that they could have one normal night. But if we can show up for kids on Halloween, like, why can't we show up for them and get all of these essential services reopened for families and for kids? Like, that to me is like, okay, if we're willing to show up for a night about candy, why can't we show up as a society for their education, for our future? Like, this is all of our futures. It's not just our children. And I think that is like what to me has really, I always kind of knew, but really been laid bare over the past several months, is that we just certainly do not see children as a collective investment.
There was a great piece in Time, actually. The headline was about, it's time to recognize childcare as infrastructure. And that's part of that argument. I also wonder, you mentioned that you're the only mom on your team on this great publication focused on women's issues. How do you think motherhood changed your approach to your work at the Lilly?
I mean, I think, like, you know, we were always really focused on, even before I had my son, we were always really focused on the challenges that moms face, the challenges that families face. As you know, there's another vertical at the Post called On Parenting. And they're really focused on kind of the range of parenting. So we really focus on really what this decision around wanting to have children, choosing to have children, as well as early motherhood and the experience of however you reach having a child, whatever that experience is for you. So that's kind of like where our focus lies within parenting and mothering. But I think after becoming a mom, I see the ways that these indignities come toward you in small ways every single day across everything. Whether it's that, oh, you know, my daycare will only talk to me about, you know, they'll only talk to me like, oh, you forgot to send a hat. You forgot to send this. But okay, well, you saw my husband the last 2 days.
That was Ruth Bader Ginsburg's, one of her famous lines was like, the school called her and she was like, call my husband, like, he's in charge of this.
Yeah. And that's obviously such a small example. But I think, like, when you really see the way that these are just the way that people talk about moms, right? Like, I think the language we use toward women when they become moms, there's just so much dismissive language used towards moms.
Like what?
A really good example of this is a couple weeks ago. This is very loaded, but a couple weeks ago, Billie Eilish, you know, I guess someone caught a picture of her and it looked like she'd gain some weight, like so many of us maybe have during the past several months at home. Totally normal human thing to happen. And people immediately start saying, oh, she has the body of a wine mom in her 30s. You know, she's just a person. Yeah.
There's an SNL clip. I think it's Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. And it's the mom jeans commercial. And the kicker is, get her the jeans that say, I'm not a woman anymore. I'm a mom.
Exactly. We take away this womanhood from mothers because they're just moms. And I actually heard you have a conversation, I think with Candace Cameron Bure, about this idea of just being a mom, which is just so comical to me because you're 100 other things. And then you're also a mom, just like I'm also so many other things. And I think it's so much of why so many women face this kind of identity crisis when they become a mom.
The Lily is often referred to in other media as a feminist publication. Do you own that label? And like, how do you define that word and think about what the feminist movement is going to be in the decades to come?
Yeah, I think some people sometimes try, and certainly I've gotten many emails from people trying to use that in a derogatory, way, which I just think is kind of funny. There's nothing, I mean, of course, there's nothing wrong with being a feminist. I think that for a very long time, what was considered feminism and what people looked at as feminism still left out many, many people. It left out women of color. It left out people who didn't identify with a particular gender. And part of what I hope that Lily is helping to tell the story of is that there is so much more room for this idea of feminism to grow and to continue to expand, and that the failings of feminism we can solve going forward.
As you know, I always like to ask, at Motherly, we believe that motherhood brings out our superpowers. And I know for me, the things that I now see as my superpowers were not things I even thought I was good at before I became a mom. So I'm wondering what you think your superpowers are.
Being a mom has helped me bring more perspective into my life and my work, and I think has really made every other part of my life so much stronger. When my fear at the beginning was that it was going to make every other part of my life weaker. So when I say that, I think I mean like, sure, I feel like I'm much more efficient, you know, all of these things that are kind of born out of necessity. You know, you always hear parents say like, we have no choice but to be efficient now. But I also mean that just my world lens, you know, I think it's given me so much additional perspective. It's given me more empathy. And I think it's just made me a better person. And I was just so scared being a mother was going to take away from all these other parts of my identity, when in fact, I think it's just brought so much more.
I totally relate. I love that. Well, Nima Roshanya Patel, thank you so much for joining us on the Motherly podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Has anyone ever treated you unfairly because you're a girl? No? That's good. Do you think you're treated equally because you're a girl? Should boys and girls be treated equally?
Yes.
Why?
Because there isn't much of a reason not to.
It's that simple, right?
Well, that's it for season 6. Nima, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you to our listeners, as always, for tuning in. We're going to take a little break and come back in April with a stellar lineup of guests all around the theme of home improvement and design. Don't be intimidated. These are really practical and approachable ways to make the spaces that we live in, the spaces that we raise our family in, better and more pleasurable and beautiful for us. I'm really excited to bring you our episodes for April. It has been a long year. We have worked really hard to get to this season in the pandemic, to get to the spring. I'm starting to feel hopeful again, and I'm excited about all the topics that we're going to explore together. So I hope you'll listen in. And as always, I would love it if you spread the word about the Motherly podcast. So right now, if you could, take 5 seconds. Open up Apple Podcasts, leave us a review. 5 stars is what I go for, but I love your honest feedback. The Motherly podcast is produced by Jennifer Bassett with editing from Seaplane Armada. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions, and I am your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.